Where do you want to start? Texas? Trump's takeover of D.C.?
Yeah, I guess we could start with Texas. Just, okay. I mean, the, both of those issues sort of has, you know, definitely were in the news yesterday, and had there was lots of...
Yeah, if anybody, and we invite phone calls, mm-hmm. particularly from people who disagree with whatever we may say. But normally areas are states redistrict a year or so after
the census,
which yeah. occurs like in 1970, 1980, 1990, 2020.
Right. Every 10 years.
Those kind of years.
Exactly.
Every 10 years got to end in zero. And I think that's mm-hmm. in the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Trump wants to change the Texas balance, change mm-hmm. the balance in Congress, get five more seats
right.
by basically gerrymandering in the extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know what Texas is, how much Texas is gerrymandered now?
No, but actually, I think before we even get into that, can we just give a little definition maybe about what gerrymandering
yeah,
is?
Yeah, there was a guy named Gerrymander, I think.
Or, okay.
Or jury, anyway. a long time ago.
Right.
But yes. What it means is basically, you know, if we were running Las Cruces City
mm-hmm.
and we wanted our people running it, we would figure out basically, all right, we'll draw, instead of drawing our districts in whatever other way makes sense, we'll draw six districts where our people, whatever they may be, are likely to win.
Right.
Or, you know, fairly clearly going to win. And then we'll put everybody else in this other district, even if it ends up being a weird least,
right.
you know, it's often
weirdly
done
shaped,
to put
yeah.
those people of some other color or ethnicity, in a box. And it renders, and the effects in Texas already of doing this, because they did it in a couple of extreme ways in, I think, 2003 and 2022 or thereabouts. But and in 2003, I think it was, the Democratic legislators left to kind of protest. At any rate, Texas has, I think it's about 48%, 45 to 48% registered Democrats.
Wow.
38% registered Republicans.
Really?
And about 15%
independent yeah.
or non-declined to state or minor
right.
parties.
Right.
They don't break it down for you. So if you take that and figure, well, all right, if our state has
right.
you know, 48% Democrats and 38%
yeah.
Republicans, well, we ought to have, you know, if we have, as Texas does, 38 legislative positions, one's vacant right now, it ought to come out, you know, maybe 27, whatever it would be, 27,
yeah.
23.
Yeah, just the majority,
Democrats,
right,
you know,
should be.
27, 20,
yeah, based on
you know
those
what
numbers
it is?
Alone.
What it actually is, at the last, it's it, because one is unoccupied
right,
temporarily.
Vacant at the moment, yeah.
25 to 12 Republican. And that's completely, you know, inconsistent with
right.
the population.
Right.
The Republican state government, you know, has been able to do that. And now they're going to add another five, which I guess would make it, 25 to 12,
yeah.
30 to 7, actually
yeah.
30 to 8. If the vacant one were Democratic. So whatever percentage that is wacky.
Well, like you said, inconsistent with the number of registered Democratic voters. I can't imagine that amount of people claim, you know, a certain party on, you know, when they register or carry the, and then when they go to the polls, they actually make a different decision. So,
no. Well, they don't, a lot
right.
of them don't go to the polls because
maybe for that reason. But right, I guess that's the whole point, right? This is what gerrymandering does. So drew the lines to like capture more Republican votes. It's and
reminiscent of the rotten boroughs in Britain that Dr. James Parkinson and others protested, where they would have a whole city had one representative and some country town with about 20 people and a lord, the lord got to pretty much choose who'd go from that district, and they were equal. that's how it was in Britain before around the time of the American Revolution.
Right.
The rotten boroughs were an extreme way of having the government, the aristocracy, keep control.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, the Democratic legislators, some of them leaders, have left for other places.
Right.
So that there won't be a quorum and this probably illegal action can't be taken.
Mm-hmm.
And the latest, of course, is that because Mr. Trump wants this done, he's wants the FBI to interfere, but there's no federal crime.
Right.
I mean, they could concoct a corruption charge, but they'd have to investigate, get somebody to indict them, for corruption.
Well, right. And I mean, you know, one of the major, I would say, like Republican, pushes or, you know, in terms of governance in the United States and a really push for states' rights. So, this is Texas's issue. No. This isn't a federal government issue, even though it really is a sort of national concern because of Texas.
They fight for states' rights when it's convenient.
Right, exactly. And from what I understand, the latest is that the governor of Texas, Governor Abbott, has decided that if they can't make this decision now during this special session, that he's just going to call another special session.
Right.
You know, to keep it as something that it needs to be addressed. And so how long can Texas Democrats stay out of the state?
I think there's some kind of time frame where they have to do it by a deadline that's coming up. Whether it's because they need to do it in sufficient time before the 2026 election.
Mm-hmm. Right, for their own primary that's going to take place, right. For 2026.
So there's some time frame where they have to get it done, I want to say, in the next month or so. That might not be exact.
Okay, so then they just have to wait it out. Hopefully that's the case.
Anyway.
Well, the response, too, I actually just wanted to talk about California's response, their governor, and saying, well, if you're going to do it, we're going to do it. And more than anything, the reason I just wanted to mention is just, what a deterioration of our democracy. You know, gerrymandering itself and when it became, right, it's improper for sure. I don't know if it's illegal, but the idea.
It's the Supreme Court lightened up on that. It's illegal if it's to disenfranchise a minority group.
I see. Okay.
But otherwise, it's fine.
Right. Yeah.
Which is unfortunate. But
right. A slap in the face in terms of what American democracy was intended to be and what we sort of spout around the world, that somehow that we're a country that, although we might have lots of disagreements, we come together. Well, we have a vigorous discussions and we vote and we make compromises when we need to make compromises. But essentially, like, that's the whole point of democracy, right, is that we get to vote and decide for ourselves. And if a state government, any state government, wants to then impose its own views and change the lines and redraw things, to impose its views, I think that really goes against the spirit and the idea of democracy.
You're absolutely right. And it also accentuates what I think everybody of whatever political complexion, with a few professional exceptions, thinks is one of our biggest problems, and that's this hyper-partisanship where we're going to root for Ohio State or Michigan, the Democrats or the Republicans, whichever it is, and the other people are evil. Don't deserve to have breakfast in the morning. And it's it will only, you know, the Democrats, the Republicans doing this is terrible. The Democrats doing it in response, you kind of think, well, you know, in some ways that's, you know, you kind of have to if you want to maintain some fairness. On the other hand, that's terrible too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You can't. Yeah. Name the other side's tactic as inappropriate, right, and misguided, yeah, and then do it yourself in a response to make sure that it's, you know, fair. And I'm doing air quotes here, right? That's,
yes.
Yeah. I think that's that in and of itself, I think, is misguided. Yeah. But anyway, you were going to talk about,
well, lots of other stuff. Mr. Right. Trump is going to meet with Mr. Putin in Alaska this week.
Mm-hmm.
Most authorities say that in itself is a great victory for Mr. Putin, because he's violated international law. He's, as one of Trump's sometime pals called him, it's a rogue state. Mm-hmm. He's heading up a rogue state that's, you know, started this war and has been pursuing it for several years. And he's getting to meet with the president about,
yeah,
it. And, of course, the president's been talking about land swaps. Swaps always strikes me as a weird term, because I don't think he's going to give Zelensky any part of Russia.
Well,
so I don't know. There's not a swap.
Yeah, what swap is going on? What part of the United States?
He clearly is thinking, well, we'll reward Russia for having, you know, gotten into this war and come to a stalemate where they occupy some territory and, you know, haven't been destroyed yet. And I'm not seeing that as something that should be rewarded. I don't think most senators see it as something that should be rewarded. Certainly the Europeans are appalled and frightened that Putin's going to get the best of Trump.
Well, what power does our government have to make those sort of decisions? I mean, is it just...
You mean our government?
Yes, the U.S. government, yeah.
Well, we have a...
Is it influence only? I mean, obviously, right? It's influence that we have the...
Right. We can't dictate that. On the other hand, you know, we could decrease our supply of military weapons to the Ukraine, which would have significant consequences ultimately, depending on how radically they did that, because they're also selling weapons to Europe that Europe has given to Ukraine. And the fact that they're selling things, Mr. Trump's not likely to give up on that for a moment. Oh, we're getting more money.
Right, yes. U.S. government weapons sales experts.
One of the other pieces of craziness, I mean, you wanted to talk about the Bureau of Labor Statistics lady who got fired.
Right, yeah.
You want to talk about that?
Yeah, we can. Well, and then we can also talk about, you know, Trump taking over D.C. with...
yes, with National Guard and taking over the police.
With big weapons again. And I just wanted to mention that just because, you know, in my training as an economist and a statistician and, you know, very basic, you know, I have, you know, some very basic training. But the fact that this person was fired because Trump didn't like the numbers is just ridiculous. Like, you know, that person, you know, there's a certain level, there's, you know, ethical standards all professions, you know, follow. Yeah. And, you know, if the numbers are the numbers. They're not something that you can just, you know, make up. And that's what I just wanted to say about that. And so it feels a little bit like it's going to get to the point where that story of the king with when he doesn't have any clothes on. It's,
right.
The emperor's
new clothes.
Emperor's new clothes. Well,
it's very much like Stalin. He punished statisticians if he didn't like the numbers. But, you know, to me, it's kind of like, well, I'm tired of losing the Yankees, so I'm going to hire new umpires. And the hell with the American League umpires.
Right.
And it has real world consequences in a couple of ways. One is that all people who are serious have money to worry about. I don't have enough to worry about this kind of thing, but nations and investors and banks rely on those. And those, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, so far as I know, has a reputation for very accurate statistics, year in, year in, presidency out.
Right.
Without regard to politics and what the anybody wants, and suddenly they fire the head. You gotta, and of course he's firing, he's shooting all the messengers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
You know, whether it's on climate change or vaccines or whatever it may be.
Yes.
You know, if you're saying the wrong things, he's firing you, or you know, taking it off the website.
Right.
He's even reviewing all the Smithsonian exhibits to make sure
right.
he approves of them.
Right.
Which is a level of interference with the world as a, you know, that we just haven't seen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
well, right, and that's why I brought up a silly example, but Emperor's New Clothes is like the viewpoint. He's trying to shape the world through his eyes, right, and his views. And so it's like, isn't this wonderful? And it's like, well, no, you know, you are actually, you don't have any clothes on. It's just another victim in his, in his trying to shape, shape our new government mm-hmm. into something that he thinks is the best and right thing. And unfortunately, it's, good people that are who have been relied on to provide service mm-hmm. to the rest of the country have lost their jobs because of it.
And he's also this week basically taken over D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, you might say, what does that mean? D.C. is not a state. It's a federal district. So the president, the United States government has authority over it. And that's true, but that authority is limited by a congressional act. I forget when they passed it, but mm-hmm. rather a while ago, that gave D.C. semi-autonomy, you might say. And it can run its police and run its basic, any city or
right.
entity. Run its business. One difference is that the president would be the only person who could call out the National Guard, which he, of course, did not do January 6th.
Right.
But railed against the mayor and Pelosi, the majority leader, for not calling out the National Guard, which only he could do.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he can do that. Under certain circumstances, and he can take over the police for up to 30 days. He's got to tell a congressional committee chair about it, which he did, make a proclamation, which he did, and then he can do it temporarily and up to 30 days without real congressional. He's kind of got to give a reason why he's doing it. What he said about it is D.C. is mired in crime, and the statistics, if you look, first of all, violent crimes have been going down for rather a while.
Right.
And they've particularly been going down in D.C., and they're quite below other cities of their size, of its size. I forget, it's similar to Memphis and Detroit, which have a lot more crime than D.C., and Nashville, which is at about the same par for crime, and Denver and Seattle,
mm-hmm.
and El Paso, which,
well, there you go.
Despite all the, D.C. is kind of relatively low at 1,100 or whatever it is, 1,100 instances of violence per 100,000 citizens. And El Paso's at 278.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Despite the fact that, oh, these immigrants are all creating great crimes.
Right. Well, I mean, I think so you mentioned El Paso and immigrants and crime and now D.C. and this imaginary crime. And it's, again, making up this crisis, you know, it's like, this is not, there is no crisis.
Right. He's lying. Mm. He's doing this. Mm-hmm. Why is he doing this? It makes him look bigger, and he always likes that, independent of the politics of it. I think he also, we remember that he wanted to get the army to get people out of his way so he could have a photo op at that church a few years ago.
Right.
People were protesting. Oh, get him out of my way. And I think he wants...
Yeah.
To be able to do that, get people, out of the way, particularly protesters, there and elsewhere. Mm. And this is kind of a practice run. Let's see what I can get away with. And people say, well, he can only do it for 30 days. I'm wondering what would keep him from saying, his 30 days run up on September 16th.
Yeah.
And on September 18th, he said... crime's back up again, or there's
right, renewing my 30 days. Yeah.
The devil's got hold of these citizens, or whatever it may be.
Well, right, and not just that, but what precludes him to do his executive order around all of that either? Like, well, now it's my right because I say so, and the crisis continues, and 30 days is not enough, and I'm going to sign this.
Right.
Executive order in perpetuity.
30 days.
Well, not even 30.
Well, in perpetuity, yeah.
Right, because why would he, until the crisis is over, right? He would not.
And then he'll do the same for Los Angeles.
Right, exactly, right. And New York and all
fortunately,
the major.
Fortunately, we're too small. I don't think he could even spell our name, let alone find us on a map.
Well, I mean, I think we're close enough to the border that I would say that's probably not the case. I think lots of people think we're safe, but I think our proximity within those 100 mile zone of the border makes us vulnerable, irrespective of the size of our population. Yeah.
Well, what have we not talked about that we should?
Well, I guess local news. There was a little bit up in arms about there was an accident in Vado that caused death, death of two teenagers.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, well, it was a DWI, and unfortunately, or at least that's the assumption that alcohol.
The drunks.
No, it was an adult who did survive the crash and was arrested, charged, and released. And there's some people who are a little upset about that part.
Why isn't he being held, or she? Yeah.
Exactly. So, feel for
it's
those families.
It's hard to hold somebody on that. Although, we've seen situations where people have like 8 DWIs. I don't know if this person has a prior, but somebody had several. Wouldn't be a bad idea for the DA to try to get them held.
Yeah, well, I guess in this situation, it wasn't this individual. This is the first offense, so it's like, well, okay, they're at this point, no reason to hold them. But
it would be really hard for the DA to, because you have to, for people who wonder about that kind of thing, under our rules now, people are released pending trial unless they pose a danger to the community or themselves. That's a hard one, and there's a procedure where the DA has to say, I think this person does, and within a short time frame have a hearing in front of a judge where the person's lawyer argues against them and the DA presses for a finding that this person is dangerous to the community, and it doesn't follow quite the rigorous rules of evidence the courts do, but, somewhat. So it's tough and time-consuming, and judges have been a little reluctant to grant those orders. mm-hmm. For better or for worse. I mean, you can argue both sides, but not in the 1 minute we have.
Right.
Before we, Daisy Maldonado and Peter Goodman, speak up Las Cruces, basically take a short break and then share the floor, as it were, first with School Superintendent Ignacio Ruiz from 8:30 to 9, and then City Councilor and Mayor Pro Tem Johanna Bencomo from 9 to 10. We're back on the air, and somewhat to our disappointment, much as we love each other, we are only Daisy and Peter. We do not have Ignacio Ruiz. We scrambled and made phone calls, and at some point got a text from somebody we know at the school system that, although I'd called up and confirmed 8:30 yesterday, someone there thought they had confirmed with Walt 9:30,
mm-hmm.
Which is not what we'd had on our calendar
right.
for some time. So we do not have. I could pretend. I could do a great job pretending to be a school superintendent.
Right. And I did the research. I was ready to ask some questions about school performances and Las Cruces. And
yeah, it's quite a disappointment.
Are we making progress on those statistics, Peter? those things called statistics that we use everywhere in our.
You and
work.
He could talk about statistics. I'm not much of a statistics guy. I can barely even say it this morning. But, you know, I'm a kind of, you know, go by instinct. You know.
Oh, I see. Well, right. I mean, I think.
I can count.
Right. That's a good thing. Well, I'm just thinking, as your train as an attorney, right, when you were in law school, right, it was a lot about like the evidence of what
yes.
can be proven. And a lot of time when, you know, people come down to statistics, it's like, well, you really can't prove it, which is true, essentially. Right. It's like, well, what is the, I guess what I say is like, what do the numbers show us, is what is sort of trends, what are, you know, movements and. Because statistics and the numbers can change, which is true, which is why also things are updated on a regular basis. It's like, well, we think that, like, this is what it's telling us. And then, you know, we can do some further investigation. We can get more numbers. We can look at other things. And it could kind of change the story. And that's the other reason why, you know, some people get a little down on the fact about, you know, jobs numbers that come out every month. And it's like, well, we had to adjust them. Because we're using statistics to make predictions. They're telling a story. Mm-hmm. And now that we have, you know, more of that evidence to like add to the story of the statistical story, it's a different story.
So as a person who has some background and training in statistics, when you hear people say, you can make the numbers tell any story you want them to, but do you kind of nod sagely and cynically, or do you get annoyed with that?
No, I mean, no, I don't get annoyed. I will agree, because I'm not, you know, I think we need to, you know, in terms of being transparent and honest about how they function. However, when people often bring that claim, they don't understand that these numbers aren't from nowhere, right? That's the other thing. So it's true, the story can change, but that doesn't mean that we're just, you know, getting numbers off the top of our head, or we're just deciding like, oh, I don't like 15%. We would tell a better story if it was more like 30%. Like, that's not what's happening, right? When we're saying that the story might change, it's like, well, we've gathered more information. And now the number, right, now that we have a more complete picture, the story is telling this as opposed to something else. So now with additional information, it is 30%, not because I feel like it, not because mm-hmm. not because it helps my case. It's because the evidence, right, that we're bringing forward, or we were able to investigate then now, has changed that number. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So did you ever do any work in statistics or just got the training?
I mostly just got the training. Yeah, it's a very technical field. I'm more, you know, a person to person, and but for sure it was valuable training, certainly for all the other work that I do, knowing those things.
Folks who are listening might be interested. What else do you? I know we talked about this years ago when you started being a co-host with us.
Oh, right, yeah.
But yeah, tell folks what you do.
Sure, I know. I was interviewed for my job, yeah, or for my job about my 9 to 5, yeah, 2 years ago when I first started co-hosting here on Speak Up Las Cruces. I'm the director of the Empowerment Congress, and we are.
Whom do you empower? How?
Well, it's an initiative that was started in 2011 to serve the Colonia communities here in Doniana County, and it's a little bit of a misnomer. The individuals that started it traveled to California, where Empowerment Congress was first started, and the intention was that community worked closely with government to solve community problems, right? And community being, you know, everyday folks as well as nonprofits.
Some listeners may be so recent to Las Cruces, they don't know what a colonia is. So tell them.
Yeah, so a colonia is an unincorporated residential area within the, again, 150-mile border zone. And unincorporated means that they don't have a municipality attached to them, as sort of self-organized communities.
They don't have a mayor. They don't have a police department.
Exactly. And they don't have a comprehensive plan. They don't, how they were formed.
Don't have a street department to repair the roads.
Don't have a street department.
Or pave the roads.
Yeah. It was private property that was sort of divvied up and sold to individuals. And some people actually really like living out in a colonia because they want to be away from the city and
freedom
hustle and bustle,
freedom from restriction.
Right, but what it comes with is lots of limitations, like you're talking about. There's no mayor, there's no funding for roads or any sort of public safety.
No municipal water system.
No municipal water system. No, I mean,
or sewage.
No, El Paso Electric wants their money, so they've been able to set people up to make sure they get electricity.
And there may be a private water company serving them or not.
Well, actually, no. So usually in those areas, it's a mutual domestic water association.
Okay.
So it's not a private company, but it is a quasi sort of government entity that is, that has set them up. So they lack a lot of resources, and they really have to count on the county government to provide those resources. And we know the county government has limited resources, and it's a very big county. So if I could just one more point about, and this is in terms of statistic, but as you know, the the population of the whole county is about a little over 200,000 people. Here in Las Cruces, it's about 110, 15, something like that. So that means the other 100,000 people that live here in the county live outside the city of Las Cruces and probably live in a colonia.
So a majority of the people who don't live in the city live in a colonia as opposed to Hatch or... Yep.
Right, or like the city of Anthony or the city of Sutherland Park. Yep.
Now, I've been here a long time and was aware of colonias. Are they decreasing in number, or is there change over time? I mean, or not?
Yeah, they really haven't increased in number.
Decreased? Or
no, I would certainly not say they've decreased in number. Probably the population in some colonias has decreased. However, in other areas, it's increased. So Chaparral would be actually a very good example. And so Chaparral is a very special case because half of it exists in Otero County and the other half exists in Doniana. And so, but it's all one community. And where do those folks go for resources? And so I actually have a staff member who lives in the on the Otero side. And she talks about how much she really hates having to go to Alamogordo for those resources.
That's a bit of a hike.
It is, right. It's much further than coming here to Las Cruces, where she gets most of her things, like going to the doctor or other sort of services like that. But she can't register to vote. I mean, yeah. She can register to vote, but she can't, right?
Right.
Right. The
she
voting part. Alamogordo.
Wow. And some of those folks just don't get services because it's not a municipality. It's, if it was a development, whoever developed it fled long ago with whatever money he or she obtained. So there's a kind of helplessness there, isn't there?
Yes. Yeah, right. And so there's this other, one of the bigger issues too is around public versus private roads. And so, right, mm-hmm. so the way the colonias were formed is private property owners, you know, had owned a large portion of land. They divided them up into different lots. And those lots, they, you know, everybody agreed, okay, this is where the road is going to go, but it's still technically private property.
And the county has legal limitations on what it can do in terms of repairing a road that is not a dedicated county road, right?
Correct. Right. Because of our famous anti-donation clause.
Which, for people who aren't familiar with it, is a well-intentioned law. I was going to say ordinance, but it's a statute.
It's in our Constitution.
That's right. It is. The anti-donation clause basically is set up so, you know, if Daisy and I are pals and I'm on the city council, I can't pave her street before everybody else's or better than everybody else's because, you know, she's a pal or she gave me $5 or whatever it may be. But basically, you can't, you know, city councilors, at least theoretically, can't tell the road department, you know, hey, pave my cousin's road as well as 17th Avenue.
Right, exactly.
But its effects are mixed at best, right? Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, yeah, in terms of the consequences, you know, these are communities that were formed many, many years ago. And actually, the county is in the process of adopting a new process on how to take over some of those private roads.
Going to get it easier?
Well, hopefully, right? But in a matter of public safety. And that's really the issue here, right? Is that, and we saw it just a few weeks ago when Valdo got very flooded from water that was coming off the mountain. And unfortunately, that community is in a flood zone. They had drainage problems and there was a lot of water all at once. And so not only did people's properties, you know, hold a lot of water, but those private roads as well. And so because of that, unpaved roads, it's a dangerous situation. And people, you know, some people had to get rescued from their homes because the flooding was so bad. Many times, and especially in emergency situations, if the road, that private road condition is dangerous, first responders oftentimes won't go into that road because then it also poses a danger to themselves, right? So as a matter of public safety, you would imagine that those private roads, it can't be just, oh, well, the reason not to pave it cannot be like, well, that's private, you know? What right. about the health and safety of the community?
Are there any efforts to use, I know the Doñana Soil and Water Conservation Commission, Soil and Water Conservation Department. Sorry, I forget.
District.
District.
Yeah.
Thank you. Districts, Soil and Water Conservation Districts are exempted from the anti-donation clause, at least to some extent, and able, you know, because their mission is to deal with floods and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. and water conservation. they can invest in doing something on private land. Is there any effort to use them as a kind of intermediary?
Oh, that's an interesting thought. There hasn't been, no. But I'm not sure that they can still take on private roads necessarily. However,
I don't know if they can either, but maybe private. I'm pretty sure they could take over private dams. But.
Right, right. I was just about to say, too, and like, and really work on sort of mitigating the flood issue itself so that it won't, so the water doesn't flow onto private property. So I think there is effort, though, to have conversations with the Doñana Soil and Water Conservation District with the Flood Commission at the county level for them to work together to figure out, you know, what's going on and how to address it.
And do we know much about when the county is going to finish, you know, its kind of new law on or new ordinance on all this?
So it's supposed to be introduced, I believe, at the next county meeting on August 26th. And then they're actually hoping to vote on it. They would, you know, since it needs two readings or one reading, something like that, right? So at the one thereafter. So I'd imagine either sometime in September or October. So it could be a positive thing, but also, you know, it could also, I think, put some limitations on private roads being taken over, because it'll have to follow a specific process, and that road will have to meet certain requirements for them to do that.
Okay.
So we shall see. But that's just actually, so that was going to say, that's just one aspect of Empowerment Congress.
What else do you do?
We do a plethora of other things. But again, because the intention was to serve Colonia communities and folks who are really just don't have representation. When I first started, I was, someone in Sunland Park reached out to me. So they are a city, although they do get Colonia funding. You know, a lot of their neighborhoods are, I would still say, in conditions that you would find in Colonia communities. And so when this individual reached out to us and we started working with them, you know, I told myself we're not going to leave Sunland Park, because there's not a lot of, these folks just don't have a lot of support in terms of working, again, to advocate for their needs at the city level.
So you felt, you know, an obligation to help them.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what we've been working on, and I know I've talked a lot about this, is the, you know, the water issues in Sunland Park and Crua and the Camino Real Regional Utility Authority that provides the water and wastewater services to Sunland Park as well as to Santa Teresa.
Are things improving on that front?
Unfortunately, so the water itself, it seems like, right, that there has been improvements and that the water service has improved and the water quality has improved. However, there's still lots of development that's going on that's causing lots of disruption, and the disruption in service, water service itself. And community there is having lots of issues around their customer service and also just finding out about stuff that's going on.
How much does the county regulate development these days in places like that? They used to be, if you were out in the county, you could do anything.
That's a good question. Well, the development that's happening actually is within the bounds of the city of Sunland Park. So not in the county itself. Well, some of it isn't. Most of the stuff that's going on, though, is in the city.
And how is the city government doing? They were kind of a punchline a few years ago.
Okay. I'm not sure what that. Well, I would say that they've swung the door wide as it can get, you know, and I think you're talking about unregulated. You know, I think people, they've tried and make it as easy as possible in terms of, as long as you have a plan and you're meeting their.
They try to facilitate development because it's good for employment and economy and paying city taxes, I guess.
Right. A number of things. Yes. In the name of certainly in the name of economic development. And so they've done the same thing too with cannabis businesses as well, the city of Sunland Park. And this was several months ago, but the last that I heard was that there was 43 cannabis dispensaries in the city of Sunland Park.
Do they get a lot of business from El Paso?
Texas, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then they're the second highest ranked municipality in the whole state behind Albuquerque for cannabis sales. Yeah, so it's a small, you know, small community of like 20,000 people.
I think I'll drive down there and just breathe.
Yeah, so it's certainly a unique place. And so when we work with folks down there, we really try and advocate that local government needs to consider the, you know, residents that live there, right? And not necessarily be very concerned about bringing in outside development, bringing outside businesses, you know, signing every cannabis, you know, business registration that they can to make more money. It's like, well, what about the local folks?
So the Empowerment Congress is sort of a public interest kind of thing to be doing, right?
Sure. I guess so, yeah.
And doing that kind of thing for a long period of time, as you have, is, as far as I can tell, both more rewarding than some other pursuits and more frustrating than other pursuits. How does it feel at this point to have been doing that for, well, how many years is it?
With Empowerment Congress, 8 years.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you asked that question because I feel like every year somebody ends up asking me that. And how does it feel? I think you're right. It's, I'll say a plus one on frustrating for sure. Because certainly wouldn't want to see changes a whole lot sooner than we get them, if we get them at all. But also, I don't know that I would use the word rewarding, because I really, my interest and my desire is really to serve the community. And I guess I just don't.
But does it feel good to do that?
I just don't. I don't see it that way, I guess, like good or bad.
Well, okay, what makes you want to serve the community?
I just feel like it's my obligation. Like this is something that I'm, you know, because I decided to do this.
Where's that feeling come from?
I don't know. I mean,
you're not contract. Well, you may be through.
No, and I know some people might take this, you know, or take this with a grain of salt. But honestly, it really is a big piece of my faith tradition. And that's sort of how I have chosen to serve this to the community, essentially. So
well,
I feel like
neat.
It's part. Yeah, thanks.
That's all great.